morning, everybody. Topic this morning is contemporary issues in food hashgacha. And I wanted to focus really on just a general overview. I've been involved the last number of years with the Chicago Rabbinical Council, obviously an organization which not only has a Besdin, but which is an important player in the food hashgacha industry, and something that we take very, very seriously. And sometimes people ask the question of what exactly, you know, requires hashgacha. Why don't we just, you know, trust everybody? It's become an issue recently with the proliferation of more of these home operated businesses where you have people who are baking goods out of their homes and they don't necessarily have a hashgacha, but at the same time, they're operating a business, they're preparing foods and they're selling the foods. And we've certainly taken a position that whenever you're involved in the sale of food, even if you're individually a trustworthy person, you're supposed to have a hashgacha. And I wanted to explain a little bit of the background to that. This has come up recently with respect to party planners. When people hire party planners for Simchas, and the party planners are also very much involved in the procurement of food and the arrangement of foods. And sometimes there's a question as well as to whether the party planners that really should operate under some sort of a hashgacha, which is also something that we believe is appropriate. And there are really, you know, three different levels. If you think about it, there's the question of how much do you trust somebody in order to just eat in their home? Person invites you and they serve you a meal and you want to, you know, be able to enjoy the meal. There's the question of somebody who is, at what point in time is the person trusted to not only invite somebody to their home, but also to engage in the sale and the business of making money off of food. And the third question is, what are the requirements for food hashgacha? Well, when you have a mashgiach, so what are the standards and the prerequisites in order for the hashgacha to be considered to be a good hashgacha, for somebody to be a trustworthy mashgiach? So those are the different areas that I wanted to delve into. Just, you know, briefly, an overview. We only have, you know, 45 minutes. Obviously, we can't go into every single detail and every single nuance during this period. So we're in the middle of Sefer Shmos, and it's kedai just as a little bit of a backdrop to bring in from the Parshios HaShavua. We started recently a few weeks ago with Sefer, with Parsha Shmos, and with Parsha Shmos, we have sort of the first insistence upon Hashgacha with respect to Moshe Rabbeinu himself. When he's taken by Bas Paro, he says, I'm not comfortable drinking this milk. You know, who's overseeing the milk? And and his sister goes and says, should I get, you know, an Isha Minekes Minay Vios, a Jewish woman, because he doesn't want to drink milk from anybody who's not a Jewish woman. And Bas Paro says, yeah, Lechi, go and take. And Miriam takes the Eim Hayalet, takes Yocheved to be the one who provides Moshe Rabbeinu with milk. And Rashi writes on that pasuk in the Perek Beis of Parsha Shmos, Malami Shech Siwaso, Alamitzvias Habe Linok Velo Yonok. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to drink any milk. He didn't want to nurse from an Egyptian. And the Darchi Moshe in Yeridei Simin Peyalef explains that this is that the Chaylev Nochli is Kechaylev Behem Matzmea, that it wasn't considered to be kosher if the milk didn't come from a Jewish woman. So the Rashba says, that's not entirely true. The Darchi Moshe quoted the Ryan as saying it was non-kosher. The Rashba says, no, the Medina Chaylev Nochli is Kechaylev Yisraelis. Medina, milk is milk. Milk from a human being, at least for a baby, is considered to be mutter. But by the Zamidas Chasidus Shlo Dahanik Min Anakwis, the Fisha Teva Shal Yisoa Rachmanim and Baishanim, because it's considered to be appropriate behavior. Midas Chasidus not to drink milk from a non-Jewish woman, because there are certain midos that the Jewish women have that is conveyed through their milk, a certain rachmanis, a certain compassion, a certain modesty, and so forth. L'chein in lahanik min ha min anachris. And the Shach goes so far as to say that, let's say you had a Jewish mother who had to have non-kosher food for pikuach nefesh reasons, so it was legitimate, it would still be appropriate for her to get a different Jewish woman to be a nursemaid to provide milk to the baby, so that the baby would not be nursing from a source which is not 100% perfect. It doesn't convey the proper midos that, you know, non-kosher food or something not from a Jewish woman would not convey the perfect character traits. And this is the idea that we have that non-kosher food, in addition to being usur, it's obviously a prohibition in the Torah, it also is metamtei mesalev. It also causes a person to have a spiritual stain on themselves so that they become more distant from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And there's an article that I saw, and there's a journal that deals with the issues of kosher dairy. It's called Benesip HaChalav. And Rav Mordechai Gross, who's involved with the Tenuva organization, so he wrote an article in which he asked the question, we understand why Moshe Rabbeinu needed to have this very high level of kashrus, that he shouldn't even nurse from a non-Jewish woman because he had to speak directly with the Shechina. Why is it that the rest of the Jewish people, we have to be so machmir about this? So he quotes from the pasuk that in Parsha Shmini that says, "Vayidbar Hashem Moshe Be'alon Lemor Aleihem Davu Abnei Yisrael Lemor Zosachaya V'chule." The pasuk says that Hashem said Lemor Aleihem about the laws of kashrus. And the question is, why do we have these extra words, Lemor Aleihem, when it says Hashem is speaking to Moshe and Aaron, and afterwards he tells Moshe and Aaron to convey these laws of kashrus to the rest of the Jewish people. So what is Lemor Aleihem to come to convey? So he quotes the Kedushas Levi. Interestingly, the Kedushas Levi says that we have a pasuk in Yovel, the Navi Yovel, who says, "V'nibu b'nechem v'noseichem." That in the future, the days of Mashiach, everybody's going to be a Navi. Everybody's going to have this power of prophecy that they're going to speak the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in order to speak the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have to have a purity of your soul, that everything that you imbibed, everything that you ingested, has to have been 100% perfect. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, in the end, I'm going to speak with every single one of you. Therefore, every single one of you has to be extra scrupulous and careful. To stay away from non-kosher food. Even anything that has the slightest smidgen of a question, that it's not 100% pure, it's mitamtei misalev, and you could find some sort of a heter, but it's not perfect. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu was so scrupulous, we have to, our mouths have to be 100% pure. It's the famous comment of the Mesilas Yesharim in Perek Yud Aleph and Mesilas Yesharim. He says, anybody who has a moch bekad kado, anybody who has a brain in their head, will understand that ingesting non-kosher foods or anything which has the slightest bit of a question mark, it's like eating poison. You should view it like poison. And if you would have the possibility of even a shasha katana, even the slightest possible concern that there might be some poison in what it is that you're ingesting, obviously you're not going to be lenient to take something that might have some poison. And if you would, you would be considered to be a complete imbecile. So therefore, so too, when it comes to non-kosher food, shu eres mamish l'nevel nefesh, it's considered to be poison for our souls. So who's going to take any chances? And this is one of the reasons why we're so incredibly careful. We don't just say, oh, the ingredients look like they're probably kosher, so what's going to be the problem? So there's a mountain of problems, especially today in the kashrus industry, with respect to utensils, with respect to the equipment, with respect to enzymes, with respect to where ingredients can be derived from, with respect to bishul akum, all kinds of different issues and problems with respect to practically every single food product. So who's going to take any chances? This is why there is so much of a kosher industry today, which has become very highly regulated. We even have an organization, like an umbrella organization called ACO, Association of Kashrus Organizations, that many, many of the kashrus agencies are a part of, that try to streamline the standards and make sure that we confront new contemporary issues in kashrus, and that we have a reasoned and we have an intelligent approach towards making sure that there not be any questions with respect to the kashrus of any food. So I have here at the CRC two basic principles that I'll just start off with, that I've enunciated with respect to the mashgichim. Bein l'kula, bein l'chuma. One is whether it's for leniency or whether it is for stringency. And that is, number one, if we think in our heart and hearts of hearts that something is permissible, so we have no business telling people that it's absolutely usur. In other words, we can't go and tell people it's usher to drink from certain liquors because we're worried about that there's going to be like some alcohol quotient in or something like that. That's not batal. If we ourselves think that there are svaras, there are rationales to drink it in our own home, if you're going to drink something in your own home, you have no right to tell people that it is usher. You have to be consistent with respect to your standards. And on the flip side, if you think that something is really usher, and you would never in a million years eat it yourself, not just as a chumah, but you would make sure that no family member of yours would eat it or drink it, you know, either. So then you have no business giving hashgacha to it. There are certain hashgachos where the hashgacha agency takes the position that, oh, well, we're giving a hashgacha to that meets some sort of a minimal standard, so it's not going to be 100% treif to the whole world, even though I would never eat it myself. If that's the standard of your hashgacha, then as far as I'm concerned, the food is completely treif. The problem there is that you're violating lifnei iver. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, says explicitly, if you're going to give something that you're not going to eat in your own home, and you're going to tell people you're going to give a hashgacha on it, so that's a clear violation of lifnei iver lo sitei mechshol, and that would be really a Torah violation to do something like that. The same level, Rashi in Maseches Nida, Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis, says that if you're makel for it yourself, but you just tell other people that they have to be machmir, that they have to hold that something is usher, and you put your official list on your kashrus agency saying it's usher to have this and that and the other thing, but you yourself are going to partake of it in your own home, chalil asos kain. That's considered to be like rishus. That's considered to be an act of wickedness. I say those are the two basic standards. If you're going to be a mashkiach, you're going to have a position of responsibility as a mashkiach in an organization. So therefore, you have to abide just first off by those two basic standards. Now let's talk about what is the level of credibility. What's the level of nemanus that anybody has? So we know that there's a principle of eidecha neman biser. We find this in the Gemara in Gittin and elsewhere. The Gemara in Gittin daf beis on beis says eidecha neman bisurin. And therefore, this is why you can believe one person talking about like a shliach who brings a get, says before nectar, before nectar. So we're talking about what is the nemanus that a person has to say that something is kosher. So Rashi says, Eidecha neman bisurin. The Torah believes every single member of the Jewish people, Fashas Truma, that you go to somebody's house and did they take the Truma Samaisas from the produce if it comes from Eretz Yisrael? You're eating the fruit. You're trusting them that they took the Truma Samaisas. Well, a Shechita, you're eating from somebody's meat. You're trusting that they shechted it properly. Vaniko Agid Vachelev, and you're trusting that the meat was properly salted and trabered and all the fats and the blood were taken out of the meat before you're eating the meat. So we trust people. We rely upon people. Tosfos says, where does this idea that we trust and rely upon people come from? So he says that it comes from the laws of Nida. We say, B'safra law, that a woman counts, if she's a Zava, she has to count 7 clean days. She vas yomim, she has to count 7 days. B'safra law, and then she becomes tahora, she becomes pure. We say, La'atzma, we don't require supervision of some rabbis who are standing over her when she counts the 7 clean days. We trust her. And so we learn from here, says Tosfos, this principle of Eidecha Neman Bisurin. That's why there was like the question a number of years ago, where Moshe Feinstein was asked this question, can a woman be a mashkicha? When you have a kashrus agency, can it be led by a woman? Does it only have to be by a man? So Rav Moshe dealt with the question of, is it a position of srora? Is it a position of authority? You have a woman running a kashrus organization. So he said, well, maybe it's not a problem for a woman to have that type of authority. And even according to the Rambam, that it might be a problem. You just make sure that there's a rab, that there's a rabbi, a male rabbi who's in charge of the operation. And then he says, you're able to resolve the problem that way. But before he gets to that, he says that in terms of the nemanus, a woman certainly has nemanus to say food is kosher. Everybody relies upon their wives, their mothers, to serve food all the time. And the basic pasuk, the basic verse of nemanus that deals with how you trust people when it comes to kashrus or anything else, it really comes from a nida, comes from a woman. V'safa liatzma, that she is, that we trust her to count the days of her clean days in order to become a tahora from being a nida. So the question then becomes, So that may be when you're eating at somebody's home. You're eating at somebody's home, so there is a general expectation, a general assumption that a person is believed to say that their food is to say their food is kosher. It's interesting because in the laws of Shkita, we talk about Rov Mesinei Etzel Shkita Mumkinein. When people shecht, we generally assume that they're expert at shochtim, at shechting. But we nowadays, we say, just to be on the safe side, we require that they have a Kabbalah. We require that, that they have some sort of a certificate that says that they know how to shecht, because the laws of Shkita are very, very complicated. A person might think that they know, but they might not really know all of the ins and the outs. So by the same token, a person might think that they know laws of kashrus, but as I mentioned at the beginning, nowadays laws of kashrus have become very, very complicated, and you can't just rely upon ingredients, and not everybody necessarily knows what a shkacha to rely upon, and everybody knows all the laws of how to kashrus kalim, when you have to kashrus kalim, and things of that variety. So then it becomes like a little bit more of a question mark: to what degree can you really just rely upon eating in everybody's house? This idea of chashud, that if a person is chashud, if a person is suspicious that they don't keep the laws of the Torah, saying they're machal Shabbos, so you can't rely upon their food as a general rule. And if they're chashud, that they're not generally careful about their kashrus, so you can't, you know, rely upon their kashrus. If you see, for example, that they're relying on hashkachos that are not considered to be good hashkachos. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, says kulam nisarech eitzel bal habayis mutter. That if you eat in somebody's house and you see they're eating the food, you don't have to worry that they're violating lifnei iver, because they're not going to, even if they're suspected that they're going to feed people food that isn't 100% kosher in order to make a buck, if they're eating the food themselves, so then you can trust the food. And so too, if they're sending you the food, not to make money, but because somebody just had a baby or somebody wasn't feeling well and they're giving some food as a part of the Bikur Cholim operation of a community. So the Gemara seems to indicate that most people are considered to be trustworthy, but how much can you assume that somebody, because they're a member of from community, that they know all the rules of kashrus if they are very complicated? So I had a friend who was a rabbi in a community, and what he did was actually very interesting, a very intriguing idea. His idea was that he articulated sort of a set of rules that he wrote, a list of, I don't know, 50 principles or something that he was circulating in his community. And he said that if everybody signs up, that they follow these 50 rules. So they show Mashabis, they don't eat non-kosher, you know, they don't go to non-kosher restaurants, et cetera, et cetera. But in addition to they live firm lives. But in addition, he gave like, you know, a whole bunch of rules that they only buy from the following hashgachos, and they are careful to total all of their kalim, and they know the laws of kashering, and they ask questions of the rabbi, and they heat up, this is the way that they heat up their food on Shabbos, and they heat up this way and they don't heat up that way, and so forth and so forth. And if they abide by all of those different rules, everybody just kind of like signs this statement that they agree to abide by those rules. And as long as they sign that statement, so everybody can be comfortable eating in their home. It's a very, very fascinating idea, so that you have sort of like a self-attestation, but you also make it clear what all the rules are, so that this way there isn't a question that there's a knowledge gap, that even if people might not be as well-educated, know what the rules are and that they have committed themselves to following the rules. So I thought that was a very interesting idea. I don't know if it ended up working out, because the rabbi didn't really last in that community, so I can't really say. But it was a very, very fascinating, you know, notion, because otherwise it really does create a lot of discomfort sometimes, in terms of you lead it by some people and not other people, and it creates a lot of tensions, especially with a rabbi of a community. A lot of rabbis make a rule that they don't eat to, you know, in anybody's house, just to be on the safe side. But one thing that we see is that to the degree that a person is generally considered to be firm, and they're not considered to be chashud, they're not considered to be a suspicious person who's suspected of wrongdoing or of eating treif and so forth. So then there is more a level of believability if you're just eating in somebody's home, or the person has a chesed, is sending you some food. But it becomes a totally different enterprise when there's money involved. When a person is making money off of the enterprise, so that's a totally different story. And that's really what the Gemara in Avodah Zarah talks about. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that in certain places in Syria, it talks about in Syria, there were shopkeepers, chenvanim sheb Syria, chashidi de lo kapti alif nevi lo sitin mechshol. They were suspected that they weren't as careful if they're making money off of the enterprise, and it's just a question of lifnei iver, serving people food that maybe they wouldn't, you know, be so comfortable with, you know, themselves. So then you can't trust the food. And that's unless what? That's a question. Do we say that it's only when we know that the people are considered to be shady? Or do we say no, that a person is always considered to be shady or suspect unless they're niskazik bekashrus, unless there is a strong chazaka that's been established that this is a trustworthy individual? So this is a machlokus between the Rambam and the Ravid in Hilchos Maskolas Asuras Perek Yudal. So the Rambam writes that vizman hazeh, nowadays everybody is in this category of what we call the chenvanim shebesoya. In lochin yayin mikol makom, you don't buy wine. And the Rambam doesn't only apply this to wine. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah applied it to like certain items that people were particularly lenient about. The Rambam says it applies to all items. Ela me'adam shehuchsak bekashrus. The person has to be what we call huchsak bekashrus. They have to be somebody who is on a high level of trustworthiness when it comes to kashrus. The chena basa ve'agavina, and so too, if you're going to eat meat with that, if you're going to trust the person with their meat, you're going to trust the person with their cheese, or chatichas dag, you're going to trust the person with respect to the fish that they sell, if it doesn't have a simen. So they have to be muksak bekashrus. And the Ravid disagrees. And the Ravid says, nothing doing. That's only if the person is kashrus. It's only if the person is suspect. But otherwise, we don't assume that the person is automatically suspect. But the Rambam that clearly holds that, no, a person has to be niskazik bekashrus. And the Shulchan Aruch has this as a machlokus between the Mechaber and the Ramah. The Shulchan Aruch in Siman Kuf Yates, Sif Aleph, it has cites the Mechaber. The Mechaber says that if a person is kashrut, so then you can't trust them with respect to any food that they're going to sell. And the Ramah says, V'yeshomim afilu misha einu kashrut. Even if the person is not kosher, they're a firm person in your neighborhood, but they're running a business out of the house. They're baking goods and they're selling cookies or whatever. They're making money off of it. If you don't know for sure that the person is muksuk bekashrus, that they're on a very, very high level from kite, you can't buy anything where there is the possibility that the food might not be 100% kosher, even though you would be allowed to eat in that person's home, that as long as you don't know that there's anything, you know, wrong with them. But in order to trust what they're selling, they have to be on this high level of muksuk bekashrus. So the Aruch HaShulchan, who has a number of extensive discussions about this, which time doesn't permit us to go into all of the nuances, although you could look at the source sheets, but the Aruch HaShulchan in Siman Kuf Yud Tes says that this is the Minhag HaPashut, is that we follow the opinion of the Rambam, and he quotes the Taz, who says that we've had a Yeridas HaDoros, that nowadays we just do not have the same level of reliability with respect to every single person. And also he makes a little bit of a comparison with the laws of Shkita. Just like with Shkita, we say that it requires not only a level of frumkai, but a level of mumchius, requires a level of expertise. So nowadays, everything kind of requires expertise. It's not as simple as it was even 50, 60 years ago. Food production wasn't nearly as complicated as it is nowadays. Nowadays, there's so many hashkachas, there's so many problems with different foods that you never would have even dreamt about. Even as we know, with fruits and vegetables, not even everybody knows how and when to check for bugs and things of that variety. There are so many questions. There's so much expertise that is required nowadays. That therefore you require the standard of muksak bekashrus. So the Chelkas Binyamin is a sefer that's written by Rav Binyamin Cohn. He's a big time chacham, lives in Brooklyn. He's the son of Rav Feivel Cohn, and he kind of has written a number of svarim about contemporary halakhic topics, giving you sort of the update of what our practices is and what our practices are when it comes to some of these different areas of halakha lemaisa in the modern age. And he writes that besides the fact that we've seen kilkul adoros, that we've seen that people are less knowledgeable, less careful, and so forth, and even when people are selling goods, they're not always so careful to always check the hashkaka 100% and so forth, that we have to be so careful nowadays, he says, he quotes another opinion, and this is the opinion of the Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel is not just a recent new modern authority. Beis Hillel was an authority who lived in the 17th century. His name was Rav Hillel Bar Naftali Tzvi Hertz, and he lived in Lithuania. He was a contemporary. He served on the Bezdin of the Chilkas Mechokek. The Chilkas Mechokek is one of the commentaries to Ibn Ezer. And he served on his Bezdin. This is going back to the 17th century. And he said the following takana that applied in Lithuania. It's very interesting. The Beis Hillel came up with a number of takanas that we follow to this very day. Like at the beginning of the Shulchan Aruch and Ibn Ezer, the Beis Hillel is quoted by the Be'er HaTev as saying, it used to be that we trusted every single person who would come in front of us and say, I'm Jewish, even if we didn't know the person's background. He says, nowadays, we don't trust the person anymore because people don't necessarily even know what it means to be Jewish, and that there isn't the same chazaka that you can trust people nowadays when they walk in and they say they're Jewish and you have to do a thorough investigation. This all came from the Beis Hillel. So the Beis Hillel also said something with respect to kashrus. He said that they made a takana, shalolikak dava macha mishum Yisrael, that we don't buy food from any Jewish person who's just an individual homeowner who's manufacturing the food or purveying the food that comes from others. Think of people with home businesses. Think of party planners. Afidu mishemuksuk bekashus. Even if the person is known as a firm individual, even if the person is from, the person is from, no problem. You know, for sure you'd eat in the person's home. But if the person is selling goods, so then already there are different svaras. The person is under pressure. They have to make a living. It's a different consideration whenever there is the yitzur de mamona, whenever there's a monetary component that gets involved. So we're not allowed to trust others. We're not allowed to trust ourselves. You have to have somebody else who's going to be a supervisor in such a case. And therefore, we don't trust the person, Eliam Kane, unless Yesh Biyado Ksav Heksher, unless the person has a Ksav Heksher, that they have some sort of a kosher certification from a reputable rabbinic authority. So the reputable rabbinic authority, obviously, then has to be in charge of the kosher supervision. So it used to be that you would have somebody who watched over all of the time. Or you had, somebody who would be a Yosef and Nichnas, the person would come in and they would come out, at the different times. It's a question nowadays in commercial hashgacha. So granted, all of the factories, even if they're owned by Jews, certainly if they're owned by non-Jews, so they require some sort of a certification. But we have nowadays the kosher agencies are so busy and they have so many different accounts and they're mamish all over the world. So how do you provide the requisite certification that you're going to look over people on a very regular basis to make sure that there is no hanky-panky that's going on. Even when the Gemara, like in Avodah Zarah and elsewhere, speaks about Yotzei v'Nichnas, talks about people going in and out. So the Mephoreshim say, there's a shach I have in the materials over here, who said in the Simen Kuf Yud Ches, the Sipkot and Lamed Zayin in Yoredea, who says that that's all fine and good if a person's like coming back a half hour later, 2 hours later, 3 hours later. We now have hashkachos where the mashkichim are checking out the plants like once every 6 months. So how is that considered to be a good hashkacha when we say, okay, we're not trusting people anymore, we have to have hashkacha, you're only going to check the ingredients, and you're going to check the plant once every 6 months. How is that going to be good enough? So the my colleague, Rabbi David Cohen from the CRC, wrote a couple of books on kashrus in which he explains the basis for commercial hashgacha nowadays. And he quotes Rabbi Saul Belsky, Sechas Tzadik Levaka, who used to be one of the kashrus poskim for the OU. And Rabbi Belsky says that if you look at the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, on Daf Samach Aleph Amud Beis, going on to Samach Aleph Amud Aleph, going on to Samach Aleph Amud Beis, so there is this idea of a Muna She'enu Balakitzin, an idea of a kashrus supervisor who does not come at set times. Eino balakitzin, meaning that maybe the person doesn't come every 2 hours so that the plant manager knows that the person might be gone for a long time, but they could come at any moment in time. Like maybe it'll be 3 months, maybe it'll be 3 minutes. And that as long as there are in specifically scheduled visits and the plant managers know that the person could come in any single second. So that is what a lot of commercial hashgacha nowadays is based upon. It's what the Rashi in Avodah Zarah there says. It creates a sense of mirsas. So you have to create a sense that a person is going to be afraid that the kashrus supervisor is going to show up and they're going to find something that's wrong. So there has to be the possibility that the person can show up at any moment in time. That's what we do. We have a number of factories. We have a number of restaurants, that are all over the place. And the mashgichim might, especially with the restaurants, they show up very regularly. But with the factories, they might not show up for a couple of months. But every now and then, we'll mix things up a little bit, that they'll show up one day and then 2 days later, they'll show up again. But it also is a requirement that you need the mumchius, as we mentioned, not only the trustworthiness, but you need the mumchius that you have to know kind of how the product is manufactured. And you have to know, especially with the factories and the plants, they have nowadays very strict regulations in terms of the records that they keep and so forth. You have to know how to check the records to see if there has been any kind of a switch of ingredients or things of that variety. Once upon a time, but Moshe Feinstein wrote in the 1950s that when there was a company that nobody could really visit and they were preparing some sort of a vegetable oil. So Moshe Feinstein said, this was in Yoredeya Chelek Aleph Simen Nunah, he said that you could rely upon principles of, for example, Uman Lo Maro Munase, that if you have an expert, the expert is not going to want to sully his reputation, her reputation, and do things that are misleading or misrepresentations. So if they say that an ingredient comes from a certain source, you can trust them because they don't want to get into trouble. And also, if it's avida legluye, it's something where they're going to be caught in a lie later on, and they're going to be mirsus mionish. They're going to be afraid of any kind of a punishment. So based on all of these different considerations, plus, if you ask a company about an ingredient and it's not clearly that you're asking about kashrus, that you might be asking about health. You want to make sure an oil doesn't derive from animal fat because there are some people who, for health reasons, don't want to eat things with animal fat. So that's called mesiach l'pitumo. They're not telling you because they think that it's just based on some religious need that they don't care about, but it might be based on a health need that, you know, they will care about much more, even with respect to non-Jews. So he said that you can, you know, trust that this type of representation. But it's interesting, when Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked about this 30 years later in the mid-1980s, shortly before he was Nifter, and this is in Yoredeya Chelek Dalet, Simen Aleph. So Moshe Feinstein said at that point in time, you know what, the world has become a lot more complicated. And you have these companies, that these factories, if they're out in the middle of the wilderness, and there's a slight change in an ingredient, it's not as if people are going to be able to tell, or that they're going to be able to understand fully that it has happened, or that there's going to be any fear or punishment if it's something that they could easily get away with. So he said that nowadays he would not rely upon this argument that he had made 30 years earlier. And nowadays you need to have, even for something where a company is making all kinds of representations and they're swearing up and down, they don't necessarily even know what would be a problem from a kashrus perspective nowadays. They're not going to know a certain enzyme came from a non-kosher ingredient, it's a problem, or that if there was a non-kosher ingredient prepared on a certain equipment line, that it's a problem if the equipment line is the same equipment line is used for a kosher ingredient later on. So you need to have the mashgichim. You cannot rely upon just sort of these chazakos, these types of presumptions that may have been true 30 years earlier. There's another very interesting tshuva that Rav Moshe has as well, which goes to show you kind of the difference between what might be a horah, what might be a psak that a rabbi will give to somebody in a particular family situation, where a person is just in a tough bind because their parents aren't 100% firm and they have to figure out how to eat by them, you know, every now and then. And when we deal with hashkacha, it's sort of a different standard. So it's a famous case that Moshe dealt with in Europe, where there were these elderly Russian Jews who were very scrupulous about observance and so forth. And sometimes the children were communists. The children were not observant anymore, but the elderly grandparents, you know, had to live in the home of the children and had to rely upon the food that they would give them. So could they rely that the food was kosher? So Rav Moshe has a famous tshuva, Nechelik Al of Sibin Nundal in Yoredeya. And this goes back to the 1930s, this tshuva, in which he says that, well, if the people are violating Shabbos, so obviously they have no nemanis, you're not even allowed to eat in their home. But he said that in addition to nemanus, there's also this principle of kimli begava. Kimli begava is a concept that the Gemara and Ksuvos and Daf Pehei talks about, which is, it's not nemanus. A person might not otherwise have credibility to be a valid witness. But if you know the person in and out, you live with the person is your wife, the person is your son, you've grown up with the person, and you know the person never, ever tells a lie. So then he says, that's not an issue of nemanus. You're believing the person. That's yedia. I know that what the person said, the person's word is gold. So therefore, the person says it's kosher. The person says that the utensils that we use were kosher utensils. So I know that I could trust the person 100%. So he says that you can rely upon him. He says you can only be that these old Russian Jews living in the home of their secular assimilated children and were serving them kosher food, hopefully. So Moshe said, you can rely upon this rationale. They knew that the children would never, ever lie to them because, you know, they grew up with the children, they raised the children and so forth. That only works, number one, with your children. Number two, it only works because they're sick. Number three, it only works because it's a shasat chak. It's like a tremendous shasat chak. Otherwise, they're going to starve. They're not going to have any food. So they have no braver. They have no choice but to rely upon this type of a rationale. But when it came to having a mashkiach, who's somebody who is not a person who is an observant individual, but you just know that they're a very trustworthy individual, that they keep all the rules and so forth, but they're not personally kosher themselves. Can you rely upon a person like that for a kashrus organization? He says, number one, the fact that the person never lied to you does not mean that the person never lies. It's not like you grew up with a person and this is your wife, your husband, that you know the person inside out. So there's no such a heter, even if you know that the person has a good reputation. And he says that it is a very well-known thing that Habe Masim, there are many, many cases, and believe me, in the kashrus industry, you discover these many, many cases. Habe Masim Banoshim Shech Zikum Lenemonim Masop Noda Shemachu Basan Avela. They were known as trustworthy people. And then in the end, they sold non-kosher food. Remember the Muncie scandal. Remember, you can't trust people. Even if they seem like Eruch HaYidin and the like, when it comes to money, people are crazy. Rav Moshe said that he never gave the heter on a widespread scale. And certainly he didn't give this heter when it's somebody other than a family member. It's very interesting. There's a tshuva, Rav Moshe Sternbach asked the question, can you have somebody, because in certain communities, he was a rabbi in South Africa, where they didn't have so many firm Jews. He had a lot of Orthodox Jews, but they were members of Orthodox synagogues, but they weren't so firm. So he said, if I have a Machal Shabbos B'Fahesya, can I rely upon the person to be a Mashkiach on a temporary basis? And he says, oy, oy, oy. Obviously the person has, you know, no nemanus, but he says, what about the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya that talks about how you can rely upon a Te'imas Kepela? You can rely upon a chef. Like if you have a little bit of non-kosher food that gets mixed up in kosher food and you don't know whether the shishim, you don't know if there's a tam. So can you rely upon a non-Jew to eat it, you know, and tell you if the non-Jew is a chef, he's an expert, he'd be able to tell you, yes, I can taste the non-kosher food. It wasn't batel. No, I can't taste the non-kosher food and therefore it was batel. So we say that sometimes, you know, there would be the right to rely upon such a person. But he says that is maybe true when you have like a chef who's not going to ruin his industry standards. But here you're talking about a Machal Shabbos, there are no industry standards. The person doesn't answer to any kind of a code of industry or anything like that. So therefore, he says the person, you know, can't be relied upon. He said, maybe if you had some sort of an ingredient or some sort of a food product that was completely non-problematic, so then if it wasn't so problematic to begin with, there's something to talk about. But he said that there is no such thing. He says, Shayam Shkiach Me'od, that Shemosim Lashuk Dvar Mechadoshim Kshash Isser, even if something was fully kosher yesterday, today it's not going to be fully kosher because they'll make some sort of a slight change in the ingredients and the manufacturing methods and so forth. So therefore, he says that it's impossible to rely upon this. And then he tells a story. He says, and this is sort of a sad commentary to the level of the vigilance of some of the mashkichim in the industry. He says, I had a case, my comments certainly zod mashkichim. How careful you have to be with mashkichim. A large part of our job is making sure that we have properly trained mashkichim. You have non-Jewish, you know, waiters in a restaurant, you need to have mashkichim. Somebody wrote a question. You need to have mashkichim who are looking over them. There was one time, there was a God-fearing Jew who went to eat in a hotel. And Shabbos in the morning, he saw that they're heating up. The non-Jews are heating up the hot water on Shabbos. They're violating Bishul on Shabbos for the Jews and the Isser Gomor. So the guy complained to the Mashkiach, what's going on over here? You're being Machal Shabbos. You can't do that. So the Mashkiach answered him, Yehudi shemechapes kashrus kaboska. The person who really wants to keep kosher ain't a magil of a smolon. Doesn't go to a hotel and rely on their hashkacha. Not only sorry, but so therefore stop interfering. That's a very, very sad commentary. So I hope that we've come a long way in terms of the improvements that we have made to the world of hashkacha, that we believe that if there is a hashkacha, you do have a right to rely upon the hashkacha, that there should be the highest possible standards. We don't want people to be mitamtei mesaleib, for people to have any kind of a spiritual stain by eating something which is not 100% perfect. A very, very interesting case That came up just a few years ago. And this is sort of an interesting question. Can you have a mashgiach who's not Jewish altogether? Well, no. I mean, the mashgiach is supposed to be a Jew who himself is bound by all the laws of kashrus. We don't, in the end, even rely upon a chef, a non-Jewish chef, to eat the food because we're afraid that maybe they're not going to be 100% honest because they don't care about the laws of kashrus as much as we care about the laws of kashrus. So Rav Shame Kahasa Cohen, who wrote a series of shilos and chubos called Shevet HaKahasi. So we deal with the following question. There was a mashgiach, an erlecha from perfect mashgiach. You know what happens nowadays sometimes? A person finds out when they're 20, 25 years old, they're like about to get married, they're doing some research on their family, the rabbi, the Masada Kedushin is doing, and they discover their mother's not really Jewish. The mother went through, or the maternal grandmother had a reform, had a reform conversion. That there was an adoption and nobody ever got converted. People discover, it's the most incredible thing, they discover when they're already adults that they're not Jewish. This person, he was a from yeshiva guy, and he discovered he wasn't really Jewish. So then the question is, what happens retroactively with respect to all of the food that he was makshir as a mashgiach? So Rav Shame Kahas Cohen says that when it comes to the non-Jew, so we say we don't rely upon the person because maybe they have to not know why you're asking them, and they have to be an expert, and maybe they don't have and they don't have ne'amanus. And if the person doesn't realize why you're relying upon them, so then their expertise is not really coming into play. And if the expertise isn't coming into play, then it's because they know why you need to know the information. So it creates a problem. But he says in this case, where the person was 100% from, so then he says, so even though he turned out that he was really a goy, but we know that this person acted like a Jew and was 100% careful in all of his kashrus standards and so forth. So he said in this case, you could certainly rely that he was not out to mess anybody up, and he certainly wouldn't be machshel people in Yisurim. He certainly wouldn't serve anybody something which was not 100% kosher. So it's kind of like then he had to deal with the question of what about the wine that he touched? He was a non-Jew who touched wine. He came up with some sort of a leniency that I didn't think was so compelling. He was married to a Jewish woman, so therefore the whole problem of Stein Yeminim is that you worry you're going to intermarry with the person's children, and here his children are Jewish anyway, but that would mean we would rely on any non-Jew who was married to a Jewish woman. That wouldn't make sense to me. So I thought that was stretching it, but he was in a tough situation. But you have to be very careful. We had somebody from India. We had a plant in India, and the person was from the B'nai Israel. B'nai Israel tribe is a question as to whether they really have legitimacy, a legitimate yichus as Jews. And the person wanted to be our representative in the field out in India to be the mashgiach in the plant. Could we rely upon that person? They weren't really Jewish necessarily. But Moshe held that the people from the B'nai Israel have to go through a conversion, at least the chumrah, for the sake of stringency. So I paskin, I don't want to like get involved with questioning the legitimacy of this person's entire family and whether his wife is also Jewish and so forth. So I said that let him go to, he lived in Israel half of the year. He said, let him go to the local rabbanut. If he gets a letter from the local rabbanut that he's Jewish, then we'll rely upon that. And that's what ended up happening. But so these are some of the kind of, you know, contemporary conundrums that come up in the issue that come up in the realm of in the realm of hashgacha. But it's very important to have the training. We have very, very careful training. The mashgichim should understand what the rules are and should be not only from and themselves muksok b'kashrus, but they should also know what the rules are. It's interesting because the Aruch HaShulchan gives sort of like his litmus test of what's considered to be muksok b'kashrus. If you're like looking for sort of how do we define from, you know, nowadays. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, it doesn't mean the person's Yirei Elokim Mirabim. That's the highest standard. Highest standard, Yirei Elokim Mirabim, means that the person is like holier than everybody else and they're not going to ever succumb to any kind of pressure because even the people who are Yirei Shemayim say, this guy is like over and above. This guy is beyond like the rest of us when it comes to this person's Yirei Shemayim. That's a level that's very, very difficult to attain where there'll be a higher level of namanus. He says, they need a person who's misnag abidasi, you saw minich talas tefillin, they wear talas tefillin every day, mispao gimel pa'amim, midam and shachris min chlomarev, nota yodub lachila, they wash the tilas yadayim, manik is b'nei beis tovakashis, they have a kosher proper from home, das tovaseinu akadoshah, they bring up their children properly, zenik ram muksak vakashis. This is what you look for. So okay, at least, you know, we have a sense of what we're supposed to strive for in our own lives. They have the level of Nemona. So we've reached the end of the 45-minute period. We've covered, you know, sort of a basic foundation of understanding, number one, there's when it comes to eating in people's homes, just a higher level in their minds, we have to make sure that they know what it means to keep kosher. Number two, people, when you're selling goods, so then the Rambam requires person be muksuk b'kashrus, and we have the chumrah of the Beis Hillel that we follow nowadays, that even if a person is muksuk b'kashrus, you have to have a proper hashgacha, and the hashgacha has to be a hashgacha where the people are properly certified and properly trained and really care to make sure that not the slightest bit of poison, not the slightest bit of a question of non-kosher ever enters into people's mouths. We should all be zolche that we all only eat kosher and we all only serve kosher to others.